since you're a week from tonight, but then there'll be a break the following week, so let's plan on that. All right, so last week we had a sort of frivolous topic to make up for it. Tonight and next week, I want to discuss a very somber topic. And it's again an illustration where the religious intuition of the people, or at least the religious intuition of certain large communities of people, don't necessarily coincide with what the strict legislation of the halacha says, and I'm now talking about the very painful topic of the issue of martyrdom. The Gemara, in many places, and we'll go over some of these places tonight, discuss the issue of when you're supposed to sacrifice your life, when do you apply the rules of Yehoreg Ve'al-Yavor, and in other places, when are you supposed to submit? And in such a terrible choice of life or death, presumably this choice should not be left up to the individual. There should be some clear guidelines. But we know very well that there were many sacrifices during periods of Jewish history, for example, during the time of the Crusades in Europe and during the time of the Black Death in Europe. In other words, in the up until the end of the Middle Ages, certainly, the beginning of the modern period, where whole Jewish communities sacrificed themselves rather than being willing to submit. And the issue then becomes whether any such form of voluntarism above and beyond what the demands of the halacha are is permitted. And that brings us into another topic which is less emotionally charged but equally complicated, and we discussed this maybe the last time 15 or 20 years ago if I remember, so we can bring it up again, and that is in general the issue when one is dealing with life and death decisions. What can one do with, especially when the guidelines are either not clear or run contrary to certain judgment calls. So what I would like to do tonight is to go through what are the standard, some of the standard texts on the subject, and then take a look at the standard Sephardic position as posed by the Rambam, and then take a look at perhaps some beginnings of what the Ashkenazic situation position was, which doesn't necessarily coincide with the Rambam. Okay. So we'll begin with a classical text in the Gemara. These three I actually xeroxed from a printed text as opposed from my CD-ROM, because I just happened to have been at the office at the time. Alright, so this is the classical origins of the Gemara. So this is from the Gemara in Sanhedrin. It's about halfway town. Amar Rav Yochanan Mishomo Bishimon Ben Yehud Tzadok. Nimnu v'gamru ba'aliyat beit natzav olud. Nimnu v'gamru means that they took a vote, right? This was a matter that was subject to a serious debate, and they came to a conclusion on the basis of a vote. Nimnu v'gamru ba'aliyat beit natzav olud. Kol averot shebatorah. Im omrin la'adam avor va'al teharek, ya'avor va'al yeharek. That one should submit on all averot. If someone is threatening your life and forcing you to commit an averot, the only three forms, or the only three areas in which you should refuse to submit are idolatry, illicit sexual relations, and murder.
Baba? Yeah, okay.
When this meeting took place in Aliyat Beit Natsa Balud, I think we can only conjecture. The reasonable conjecture was that it was at a time of severe crisis, presumably sometime around the Bar Kokhba revolt. That would be a guess, but we don't have a firm evidence. The Aliyat Kaharim Lo. Vahatanya Amar Rabbi Yishmael Minayin Shemamulo LaAdam LaAvora LaAdam Avora Udat Kochavim VeAl Tehareg Minayin SheYavod VeAl Yehareg. Rabbi Yishmael was of the opinion that even in the matter of idolatry, a person should submit rather than allow himself to be killed. Tamad Loma
Vachai.
What was
number one? Was it Kochavim?
He's saying that this seems to disagree. Rabbi Yishmael's position seems to be in contradiction with this vote that was taken. It was a vote taken which says that Yehoreg Ba'al Yavor on these three, and you should submit on all the others. And Rabbi Yishmael seems to be of the position that even on Avodat Kochavim a person should submit to live another day rather than resist.
There's no source for any of these.
Each one is quoting a source. It says, then the Gemara will discuss.
He says,
the mitzvot of the Torah were given to live by and not for martyrdom. So, Yachol Afilu Bafarhesya. Rabbi Yishmael says, perhaps, is this true even if this is a public display? Talmud Loma Lo Tachalalu Hashem Kadshi B'Nikdash. Okay? In other words, according to Rabbi Yishmael, even Avodah Zarah, one should submit unless it's in a public forum. If it's private, if a priest holds a gun to your head and says, come into the church and bow down, or else I'll shoot you, you should go into the church and bow down. But if it's a public event on television, then you should resist. The question is,
what source is it?
All of these individual cases, unfortunately, I mean, this is everything here is highly charged, but of course every single one of these individual cases can always be said that was a horat shah, that was a particular moment in history where a person had to act in an extraordinary fashion. But obviously the fact that they sat and discussed this issue meant that this was a time of crisis in which this was a matter of public policy. They had to decide were Jews going to survive or not going to survive, and if the Jews were going to allow themselves to be killed on all matters, then this would affect the outcome for the country, for the people as a whole. So this was not a laughing matter or a trivial matter. The Jewish leaders at that time came together and took a vote. And now this vote, the Gemara says, seems to contradict what Rabbi Yishmael says. Because Rabbi Yishmael seems to be of the opinion that as far as Avodah Zarah is concerned, you're allowed to submit as long as it's not a public demonstration. Okay. So the Gemara says, Inu diyamach Rabbi Eliezer. Titani Rabbi Eliezer omeir, v'yahafta es Hashem Elokecha v'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha v'chol ma'odecha. אם נאמר בכל נפשך, למה נאמר בכל מיודך? ואם נאמר בכל מיודך, למה נאמר בכל נפשך? What's the difference? Why is that phrase repeated? So he says, famous quotation, אם יש לך אדם שגופו חביב עליו ממנו, לקח נאמר בכל נפשך. So a person may be more concerned with his personal safety and health than with his riches, and therefore that person may be obligated on time to sacrifice his personal safety. Okay.
Which means
that's according to Rabbi Eliezer, even in private, a person is supposed to allow himself to be killed rather than submit to Avodah Zarah.
Why do you use the term mono? What does that mean? His personal?
His wealth. One person. There are people who are more concerned with losing all of their property than with their life. I'm sure you know people like that.
No, who's
so concerned with money. Money is such a value to them that their life is not worth living if they become impoverished.
That's only academicians.
Okay. So, in any event, the Gemara says that this boat In Lud was a vote slightly more machmir than that of Rabbi Yishmael. Rabbi Yishmael says that Avodah Zarah is only in public, and they said that even in private. Okay. Now let's come to the other two categories. Gilui Arayot v'Shichut Damim. Why were those two mentions? Kidder Rebbe. This is like Rebbe's assertion. Titania. Rebbe Omer, ki kasher yakum al ishrei eruv v'atzcho nefesh kein hadavar hazeh, that when the Torah says that the girl, v'lanara lo teaseh davar, that the woman who was raped is not to be punished because she is an innocent victim, and it uses an analogy like a person who was a victim of a murderer, v'chi mal lamadnu mirotzeach, what was the actual conclusion to be learned from the case of murder? Me'ata hareze bala lameid v'nimtza lameid. A murderer was made similar to a married woman. So on either side, a person obviously should submit to being killed rather than commit an act of murder. Similarly, in the case of sexual, in the case of adultery or incest, a person should be willing to give up his life rather than commit the act. And how do we know that a person is obligated to give up his life rather than to commit murder? So here, in answer to your question, the Gemara says svarav. This is not derived from any pasuk, but it is logical. Da'ahuda atel akamei da'raba va'amale amale mari d'ra'i dal zil katle l'ponia v'ilo katlina nach. The mayor said to me, or whoever the oppressor said, shoot him or I will kill you. Amar le liktuluch v'lo tiktol. Better that you let yourself be killed rather than commit murder. Mi yemar de dama de dach samuk somuk tfe. Who says that your blood is redder? Dilma dama dahu gavva samuk tfe. Maybe the other person's blood is redder. So therefore you cannot take a decision which says, in effect, that your life is more valuable than his. Therefore, a person is not allowed to commit murder in order to save his own life. And since the Torah made a hekesh between murder and adultery or incest, similarly, a person is not allowed to engage in these illicit sexual practices simply in order to save his life.
Doesn't this go against the famous story about in the desert, he's only in that water before mm-hmm. throwing himself?
This goes against two famous stories. One is the story of that you quoted, where Rabbi Akiva said, "Chayitecha kodmim," which means that basically what Rabbi Akiva, the problem there was that there's enough water for only one. Are you obligated to give up your life to save the other person, or are you obligated to both die rather than have one survive and one die? And there, Rabbi Akiva says that your life comes first.
Yeah.
However, the difference is that you're allowed to save your life. You're not allowed to kill somebody else. You're not obligated. In abstract, the answer is very easy. In reality, the answer is much more complicated. But in abstract, the difference between these two cases is that here you're being asked to kill somebody else to save your own life, and the other. But you're not. You're not obligated to sacrifice your own life to save somebody else's life. In one case, you're actively taking somebody else's life. In the other case, your intervention is indirect.
Now you made a decision. I'd rather be killed than kill somebody.
That's right.
You're actively getting killed.
You've made a decision which says that you do not have the right to choose that his life is less valuable than yours, and therefore take it. You don't have that authority over his life. But equally well, you're not obligated to kill yourself to save somebody else's life. If somebody's dying of a heart disease, you don't have to go in and voluntarily donate your heart for a heart transplant when you're a perfectly healthy individual. The difference here between these two cases we studied this many years ago, and I would like to review it, but the difference between these two cases is one of active versus passive intervention. I'm not allowed to go actively take somebody else's life. That's an arrogance on my part. I cannot say that my life is more valuable than your life. On the other hand, I'm not obligated to say that your life is more valuable than mine. Therefore, in a situation where I'm not actively taking your life, I'm just simply proceeding, I'm just drinking my water, I'm not obligated to sacrifice my life to save yours. There's an enormous difference between these two cases. Where the difference breaks down, unfortunately, and where we need a lot more guidance, is with the advent of modern technology and modern medicine, because the distinction between active and passive is practically meaningless when you know, someone's hooked up to some large machine, and it becomes sort of a fiction. Whether you're turning off the machine for a second consists an active intervention, or not turning on the machine consists... Someone is in a heart-lung machine for 20 years and is actively surviving. Not turning on the electricity when the fuse blows, is that active or passive intervention? In other words, to the extent that we become more and more empowered over matters of life and death, this easy distinction between what is an active intervention and what is passive becomes more and more confused. There's an op-ed article in the New York Times 3 or 4 days ago about the issue of drip morphine. That's a similar situation where you have a person who is in incredible pain and is terminally ill, and the doctor at some juncture decides that his or her life isn't worth living anymore. It doesn't kill the person, it just simply increases the dose of narcotics, which causes the person to die within a week, for example. Die of natural causes, quote, within a week. You saw that in the... Yeah, well, I think the person that wrote that article raises a serious issue. I mean, that when you start to say that doctors should not actively intervene to aid the suicide of a dying patient, that's all right and fine in a society when in fact they don't intervene. But he claims, the author of this article, I don't have the facts at my disposal, but his claim was that it's a daily occurrence in hospitals, routine in medicine, that the doctor does in fact decide to kill the patient. He just doesn't kill the patient rapidly. He kills the patient slowly by declaring that will just increase the amount of morphine that the patient is taking, and I'm doing this to kill the pain. But in effect, by killing the pain, he kills the patient over a period of 7 or 8 days. The patient doesn't survive more than that limited period of time. Now, at the opposite extreme, do you say that you don't give painkillers to a person who is terminally ill with no hope, as far as one can tell, of any chance of survival, and is in incredible pain? So you see, that you can't really draw the borderline very easily on the level of action versus inaction. Is giving a patient a painkiller an action or is it inaction?
Rebbe told us about that. Didn't he? I heard that brought off the case. You told us about the bell was ringing, and by putting out the bell or something, the person died.
That's right. We'll come back to that next week. That was Shete Al Gibboim. Yes. We will discuss that in Yetzer Hashem next week when we get to that stage.
There's an inactive.
Yeah. So what I'm saying is this: your question is extremely important, and if you were asking this question 100 years ago or 50 years ago, the answer would be clear cut. But asking the question today with modern technology and modern devices and the immense increase of human control over natural events, this clear-cut distinction between what is active and what is passive seems to dissolve in my mind, and we have to find some other criteria for dealing with this question. So that's one place in which the Gemara that we're learning here comes in conflict with other sources. Another place where it comes in conflict, and we'll also discuss this next week, or if we don't finish it next week, in 3 weeks, is the fact that the Gemara and Horios and elsewhere tells us that we do make decisions when it comes to saving lives. if you have several people and you can only pull one up onto the boat, and unfortunately, as we well know in recent times in Jewish history, this has occurred, you have to make a decision as to whose life is more valuable. So when the Gemara here says, it applies in this narrow situation where you're going to again have to decide whether to kill somebody else to save your own life. But suppose you're a third party. It's not your life that's in charge, but you have a,
you're holding the rope.
Yeah, when you have several people and you have to decide whom to save and whom not to save. Sometimes that can be made easily or not so easily on medical grounds, right? You make some kind of triage and decide that this person may survive better and therefore you save him because the chances of your succeeding in saving his life are better. But in other places, there's a situation, where you have Einstein and a drug addict both in the water and you can only pull one of them out. Are you obligated under such circumstances never to make a judgment as to the value of the lives that you're trying to save when you can only save some of them?
Where did that women and children first come from? I mean, they made a decision. I don't say
At any event, we will discuss these issues. I'm not trying to shrink away from these issues, but the first major issue that I wanted to discuss, which will take us this week and next week, is more on the level of martyrdom for religious or national reasons rather than on the issue of trying to decide between the values of different lives. Okay. Ki asa Ravdimi. Ravdimi said, Ki asa Ravdimi yama Rabbi Yochanan, lo shanu ela shelo b'shat gzerat ha-malchut. This rule of Yehoreg v'al Yavor is only applicable in a situation where there's no general edict to eliminate Judaism. In other words, if there's going to be a period of time in which where the government or the church or some people are trying to convert the Jews to another religion, where then one stands fast even when the issues that are involved are not necessarily Gilui Arayot Shvichut Damim or Ratzicha. Why is there what?
That Esther.
Someone is explaining what Gzeirat HaMalchut means. Okay. Aval b'sha'at Gzeirat HaMalchut, in the time when there is a Gzeira, like for example in Spain when there were forced baptisms of telling Jews to choose between being burnt at the stake or being baptized, afilu mitzvah kala yehoreg v'al yavo. Under those times of distress, of extreme distress, then a person is obligated to give up his life rather than violate it. So here it's hard to know exactly what the meeting where the vote was taken in Beit Natsla was referring to. Presumably, it was a pretty dire situation then when they have to have a rabbinical convention to discuss what to do under these circumstances. But nevertheless, so perhaps the Gemara is being more machmir, not just simply reinterpreting the position of the the Ida and Beit Natsa. And the Gemara goes further. Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Hiyato Rabin Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Afilu Shelo B'Shat Gzeirat Malchut, Lo Amru Elo B'Tzina. This is if it's a private display. Avo B'Far Hesya Afilu Mitzvah Kala Yehorei V'Al Yavo. My Mitzvah Kala, what is considered to be a negligible mitzvah, an unimportant mitzvah. Omar Rav Bar Yitzchak Omar Rav, afilu lishinuyei arkata demasan. Even to change your shoelace. We'll see that the she'iltot has an entirely different interpretation of the meaning of this phrase, to change your shoelace. Rashi interprets it, arkata demasana, srochanal, to change your shoelace. She'im derech ha'ovdei kolchavim likasher kach v'derech Yisrael v'inyan acher kegon she'yesh tzad yahadut b'davar v'derech Yisrael yot snuyim afilu shinui zeh she'en kan mitzvah ela min hadbar alma yekadesh et Hashem b'fnei chaverov Yisrael v'hai pares yamadaber v'Yisrael. In other words, if it's something public and someone says to cut off your payos so I'll kill you, then you're obligated to do it. That's Rashi's interpretation.
Obligated to do what?
To sacrifice your life.
Oh.
You're obligated to sacrifice your life. We'll see that the Shiltos has a much more reasonable or at least different interpretation of this. Okay. For Kama Parhesia, what does it mean public and what does it mean private? Amar of Yaakov, Amar of Yochanan, Ein Parhesia Pachuta Mi'asara B'nei Adam. It has to be in front of at least 10 witnesses. Pshita Yisraelim be'inan dechtiv v'nektashti b'tol b'nei Yisrael. Boi Rav Yirmi atishe Yisrael v'nafi echad mahu tashma letanya Rav Yamei v'achpod Rav Yichi v'rabi ati otoch toch ktiv hacha v'nektashti b'tol b'nei Yisrael v'ktiv hatam hibadlu mitoch ha'idah hazot ma lahalan asara v'kula Yisrael avkan asara v'kula Yisrael. Okay. Now, the Gemara asks a famous question. Esther was a public figure, so whether the act of her sexual intercourse with the king was public or not, everyone knew that when she was going into the room with him, that was for purposes of sexual congress, and therefore this should be construed as parhesia. So the Gemara gives a strange answer. Esther kalka olam haita. That when a woman submits, then it may be considered as she's not taking any action whatsoever, and therefore is not obligated to give up her life. Amar Abaye. Okay. Yeah, okay.
However, the act that Esther's act is that Yuyariya, because she's not the Eshatish.
The Medrash says that she was married to Mordechai. Well, the Levat, the Medrash says Levayit, right? Okay. Okay. Rava Amal, Rava says, gives a slightly different answer, Hana'at Atzman Shaini. If the person that is forcing you into this act is not doing this as a deliberately political act, but is doing it for his own personal benefit, then you're not obligated to sacrifice your life. In other words, the distinction here, Rava says, is when you say public, some public demonstration, it has to actually be a political act, a political demonstration. If the person who's forcing you to do something is doing it to satisfy his own pleasure, that's not a political demonstration, and under those circumstances, you're not obligated to resist. The Ilote Mahachi, Hani Kavaki Vinum Dinuki Hechi Avinun. How can we give the heaters and so on to the Persians? That's Rashi's interpretation. Hani Kavaki Vinumuki Kleino Choshet. The Persians who worshipped fire had a particular holiday. They would take the flame from each and every house. They would take the braziers even from the houses of the Jews. Since this is a part of a public worship of Avodat Kochavim, why did the Jews allow the fires? Why, Rava says, did the Jews allow the Persians to take these fires? Okay. This is not a political demonstration. He's not telling me that I myself have to worship. Okay? There's a possible different interpretation, slightly different interpretation of this strange phrase, kuwaki vinimuki. I brought it in the English translation. If you look at my page 6 on the bottom, Hani kvaki vidimuki hechi avinu, this refers to the Greberers who permitted no fires in front of dwellings on the festival days and forced the Jews to give them up to their braziers and coal shovels, to give to them their braziers and coal shovels, and they themselves sit in darkness. On this interpretation, kvaki is derived from kuk, the sound made by blowing up a fire. The Munich edition reads, Dimoniki or Dominiki Tahani Kuwaki Dimoniki Hechir bin Lahu Nua. This belongs a strong resemblance to Dominica. Now Dies Dominica, the Lord's Day, signifies Sunday, and the Adis Dominica signifies church. Kuwaki, which an alternative meaning is Kuki, may be a Greek word also meaning church. In Rava's time, there were Christian communities in Persia observing their Sunday as strictly as the Jews observed the Sabbath, who therefore arranged for the Jews to heat their churches on that day, as they probably did a similar service for the Jews on the Sabbath. So this is a, I don't know what.
Shabbos guy.
You hired the, they were your Shabbos guy and you were their Sunday guys. And Rava was asking, how is this permissible? After all, you're
making it possible
for that. So he's saying that this is they're doing it only to keep warm, and therefore it's not considered as an actual act of the Avodah Zarah.
Who are the Greeks?
The fire worshippers of them. Okay. Okay. The Azda Rava Latame, and Rava is going according to his own opinion. The Amar Rava Akum the Amaru li Yisrael Kitol Asafstata v'Shabbat v'Shadi l'Chiyuta v'Lo Katlina Lach l'Ktol v'Lo l'Katle. If a guy tells a Jew, cut the grass, cut down some hay on Shabbat and give it to the cows, or otherwise I will kill you, you should cut the grass and not allow yourself to be killed. Shadi lenara, but if he says cut down this grass and throw it into the river, where it's a political demonstration of a violation of the Shabbat, of the Sabbath, rather than serving his own particular needs, liktale below likatol, then you should rather be killed rather than submit.
It still has to be confessed.
Yes. My timer, what's the distinction? Lavure milta kaboy, because he's doing this as a public demonstration of the person's giving up his Judaism by violating the Sabbath. Boy mine ravami, ben noach mutzuval kiddush Hashem, or ain mutzuval kiddush Hashem. Is this requirement that a person is obligated to sacrifice one's life to avoid, for Kiddush Hashem applied to a Ben Noach as well as to a Jew, or only to a Jew? Amar Rai, Itashma Sheva Mitzvot Nitzvu Ben Noach Bin Ita Tam Nihavya. If there's an additional mitzvah, Kiddush Hashem, then that means you're adding 8. Amar Leirova Inu V'chala V'zvai. Well, when you say that there's 7 mitzvot B'nei Noach, that's only the general categories, but the details, such as not worshipping Avodah Zarah, for example, would include all of the particulars of those details, and might also include Kiddush Hashem as related to those details. By Havayelah, Amar Avada Barav, Amri Beirav, Ketiv, Ladavar Hazeh Yislach Hashem Lavodecha, Bavo Adoni Beit Rimon, Lishtavot Shem Avonu Nishana Al Yadadai, Lishtavisi Yuchtiv, Ayom Alelech L'Shalom, Im Ita Lo Leimale. And if there's a requirement of a person to be Mekayesh Hashem, then why should he tell him that you can sort of appear at this religious ceremony and not resist? So the Gemara answers, Havet Sena Hava Faretzio. Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, this is another famous story. Ma'aseh bi'adam echad shenatan einav be'esha achat ve'ala libo tina. A man became infatuated with a particular woman and he was dying of passion, of desire. Ugo v'shalul rofim, v'amru eino takana ad shetiba'er. That the only cure for this man's illness is for the woman to submit. Amru chachamim yomut v'al tiba'er lo. Let the man die, this woman should not submit to him. Ta'amod l'fanav aruma, let her just simply stand naked before him, rather than have actual sexual intercourse. Yomut v'al ta'amod l'fanav aruma. The Saper Yomomi Acharei Hageder, let her talk to him on the telephone. Yamut
ולא תספר לנו מאחורי הגט. פליגי ברב יעקב הרידי והנשמל בנחמני, אחד אמר אשת איש הייתה ואחד אמר פנויה הייתה. ושלמה למנדי אמר אשת איש הייתה שפיר, למנדי אמר פנויה הייתה מייקולי היי, why were the rabbi so strict? הרב פאפה אמר משום פגן משפחה, רב אחר ורידי רב אחר, איתם אמר כדי שלא יהי בנות ישראל פרוצות בעריות. Vilintseva, if she was not a married woman, why didn't the rabbis simply arrange for a marriage? Mintsav lo miyatev data. If they were married, the man's passion would not be cool. Kedavav Yitzhak, damo Yitzhak, miyom shecharav beit ha-mikdash nitlatam viyo v'nitna lavodeo v'era. All sexual pleasure has been concentrated in sinful sexual pleasure. Sheneemar, mayim genuvim yimtaku v'lechem stoyim yinayim. That part of the pleasure principle here was the fact that it was illicit rather than legal sex. Okay, but in any event, the principle being established here is that in Gilui Arayot as well, it doesn't have to be the actual violation, but any form of sexual license is not permissible for medical reasons or to save a person's life and so on. Okay, so this is a classical text. I'm sure you've seen it many, many times, but let's just go over it to bear in mind. Here's another text which is also pretty well known, but let's go over it. That's on page 8. I'll do two texts from Gemara Avodah Zarah, and then we'll pass to the She'iltos, who has a slightly different take on some of these issues. The Mishnah Avodah Zarah. Mitzvakeh mehem ripui mamon, avol lo ripui nefashot. You're allowed to take medical treatment which is called ripui mamon from the goyim, but not a medical treatment which hinges on the issue of life-threatening situations. The Gemara says, my ripui mamon and my ripui nefashot. Ilema ripui mamon b'schar ripui nefashot b'chinam, that you're allowed to pay the doctor, a non-Jewish doctor, but not accept free medical benefits. Litnei mitvakim ein b'schar v'lo b'chinam. Ela ripui mamon davar she'ein bo sakana, ripui nefashot davar she'yesh bo sakana. V'amar Rav Yehuda afilu ribda d'tuslaya lo matzina migdaira. You're not allowed to even have a non-dangerous procedure, even just simply dealing with a scar over a puncture that was made for bleeding purposes. As Amar of Chista, Amar Mukva, Aval Amar Lo Samploni, Ela, Vipui Mamon Behem Tov, Vipinu Hashot Gufe. The difference is you're allowed to go to a non-Jewish veterinarian, but you're not allowed to go to a non-Jewish medical doctor. Vahainu Di Amar Yehuda Afil Rutelekuslai Elo Matzin Amin. Amar of Chista Amar Mukva, Aval Amar Lo, Im Amar Lo Samploni Yafelo, Sam ploni ralo mutal, but if the guy tells you this particular form of medication is good, in other words, he's advising you as to what medication to take rather than actually treating you, you're allowed to follow his advice. So var shiule mashulo ki echid mashulo mashul in sheachrini v'yatahu gabolo oynashe. The man is worried. The doctor is worried about his reputation. He figures that just as the patient is asking him for advice, he'll ask others for advice, and if he's going to hand you some bad advice with the deliberate intent of killing you, then it would damage his reputation. Whereas if he treats you and you die, then of course it can be attributed to your bad health rather than to malpractice on part of the doctor. Omar Rav Yochanan, V'yamar Lehem Rav Chistam Rav Yochanan, Safek Chai, Safek Meit. If a person is in a dangerous medical condition, then he's ain mitvakin mehem. You're not allowed to take medical treatment from a non-Jew because they may kill you. Vadai mate, but if a person is certainly going to die from this disease unless he undertakes medical treatment, mitvakin mehem. Mate ha'ika chaye sha'a. What do? Vadai. If you were saying that he's going to die, but he's not dead yet, he may live for another 6 hours, and the guy may kill you immediately. So l'chayesha l'chayshina. So for a temporary life, where you're willing to take a chance. This is an important Gemara for us, of course, that this, it says, for example, and was used for this purpose many times, that if a person is in a life, in a suffering from a terminal illness and must undergo an operation which might kill him immediately or might cure him, you're allowed to undertake those kinds of risks. Right?
For a week or so.
So your question is, what is Chayesha? 20 years, 10 years, a week, a few hours? We'll have to discuss that. All right? But it's not clear. But in any event, the underlying principle is clear, that one is allowed to put your life, your present life at risk if you're definite to assure a longer life. What's not so clear from this is whether one is allowed to put one's life at risk to improve the quality of life, as opposed to the length of life. We'll have to discuss that also. But at the moment, let's just get all of these texts under our belt, and then we will discuss them.
It's also not clear whether one must take the risk.
No, it's not clear at all whether one must take the risk. The only saying here is that one may take the risk.
Who's liable, the doctor, for doing it?
What? Well, the problem here is that the Mishnah is operating under the assumption that the non-Jewish doctors want to kill the Jews. So therefore, you shouldn't go to a non-Jewish doctor. But in a situation where you have, in quotation marks, nothing to lose, you're going to die for sure if you don't undertake medical treatment, and there's some chance that this doctor may be out to get you, but on the other hand, there's some chance that he may cure you, you're allowed under those circumstances to accept treatment. From where do we have this principle that one is does not concern oneself with? How would you translate chayisha? Temporary survival. Dechtiv im amalnu navol ha'ir v'arav ve'ir meit nisham. This is the story of the four mitzvahim. Va'ika chayisha ela love. That one is not allowed to do business with the Christians and one can't be cured from them even to save one's temporary life. So of course here this is not the same problem. Here, the situation is not that you're worried about whether the man's going to kill you or not, but whether you're going to actually be treated by a form of treatment which borders on avodah zarah. V'hol elon yichal av Yishmael, v'yamal av Yishmael, achai hanachlo v'yarpe mimenu, let him go and I will be cured. V'ani avi mikramin ha-Torah shehu mutar, and I'll prove to you from the Torah that I'm allowed to be cured from this individual. And he couldn't complete the argument to allow for the treatment from Yaakov Ish Sachina, Sachnia, until he died. And there, the problem wasn't one of being killed, but rather one of being attracted to Christianity, and therefore there would be a person, the man was obligated to sacrifice his life rather than deal with medicines that had a tinge of avodah zarah. Alright, there's another Gemara in Avodah Zarah that I want to quote before we go to the Shiltas. Okay? Ezehu ne'evad. This is later on in Avodah Zarah, by page 11. When an animal that is worshipped becomes prohibited. But what constitutes worshipping an animal? Ezehu ne'evad, kol she'ovdim oto bein b'shogeg, bein b'meisiv, bein b'onas, bein b'ratzah. Doesn't matter how, under what circumstances the animal is worshipped, it's considered an object of avodah zarah and becomes prohibited. Hi ones heki dami. What does ones mean? All of the others we can understand. But what does it mean, onus? Lav kegon ve'anas be'emach hamerata v'ishtachava lav, that a person simply captured somebody else's animal and bowed down to it. Amar rav v'chavar chama lo, kegon she'ansu ovdei kol chavim v'ishtachaver le'bemto dedeh. The goyim held a gun to his, the idolaters held a gun to his head and forced him to commit an act of worship to this animal. So here was a situation where a man was forced to worship his own animal, and the animal was therefore considered as being prohibited. Matkif l'arav zera, ones rachmana patre, a man committed this act of worship under force of duress, why should he be punished for it? Dichtiv ala nara lo tase davar, elo amarav al kol yu bekvar lo tavvem, kishvarat alocha katub, וחי בהם ולא שימית בהם יצא אונס והדר כתוב רחמנה ולא תחלו את שם קדשי דאפילו באונס הכיצד המצינו על הפרסים אמר לי רבנה נורבה תניה דמסייה לך במצול של עבדי כפה